favorite scary movie. Have you checked the children?
It's all for you!
We have such sights to show you.
Wake up time at 4:30. My blood sugar's low.
I wish I brought, like, candy.
I have cookies behind me, but...
Do you need a cookie, Anthony?
Ah, fuck it. Let's go.
Okay.
I need a Scooby Snacks, what I need.
Scooby Snacks, yes. All right, let's go ahead and bring it in there.
Yeah,
there welcome, you go. Everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster, and as always, I am joined by my fantastic co-host, Anthony Fuentes.
I wish I would have thought of the Scooby Snack thing a lot faster. That was a big gap.
No, it's true. It's okay. We can cut it.
We're okay. Yeah, we can cut the time. We're
yeah,
good.
Exactly.
Yeah,
we're
cool.
Good.
Or we can leave it so everybody can know.
Yeah, also, happy birthday to me.
Happy birthday. What? When's... Yeah, nice.
Yeah, this is my birthday episode. This is it. The reason why we brought up Scooby Snacks, we are covering probably the film I've been most excited to cover since we started this podcast.
Yeah, since you brought the idea to me, I was like, immediately, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do that.
We are covering Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island from 1998.
Yes, it might seem a little unusual for what we cover, but remember, Watership Down was rated G. So.
And this was rated PG,
yeah,
so therefore...
Oh my god. That was standards, right?
Therefore, we're going to cover it. And according to Wikipedia, it is a horror comedy. So
okay.
I'm going to allow it.
It has that art that is actually pretty freaky. So yeah I can dig
it. I mean, there's a lot of, I want to say, horror elements to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'll allow it.
Okay.
I'm going to allow it.
I
and
mean,
plus, it's our podcast, so we can do whatever the fuck we want.
I know, right?
So also, it's my birthday, and specifically, I can do whatever I want.
Yeah, and we're not sticklers to, like, format or consistency here. You know this, guys. You've been with us this long. We're aware of this.
Yes. So this is my birthday episode. I am now, by the time this episode comes out, I will be, let's see, it's coming out on Wednesday. I will be 2 days shy for my 24th birthday.
My gosh, 24.
Yeah.
Jesus, over the hill already, huh? Wait till you pass that.
I know.
No, 25 is the shit. Okay, yeah, he'll be fine.
I know, I'll get, like, cheaper insurance, I can rent cars, like, for cheaper.
Oh,
know?
Yeah, people just respect you more generally.
Great.
That's it.
Looking forward to it. Although, I've listened to What's My Age Again significantly less than I feel like I should have this year.
Oh, 26 maybe will be your time.
Maybe, no. But, all right, so let's go ahead and dive right in. For those of you who don't know, Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island is a fantastic film. If you grew up anytime in the 90s, like,
mm-hmm. Anytime.
Like, Anthony watched it as a kid in the 90s.
Yes.
I watched it as a kid in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely watched it on VHS.
Oh, yeah. Rented from a video rental store that wasn't Blockbuster when they just existed.
Yeah. So, if you haven't seen it, please do yourself a favor and watch it.
Seriously.
Especially if you're a fan of Scooby-Doo. Most people who listen to our podcast are within our age range.
Yes.
So you've probably at least heard of Scooby-Doo. At least I hope so.
Well, Scooby-Doo is pretty well known. They had that Matthew Lillard movie. So, you know, that's a whole generation right there.
It's true. And we will get into that very, very briefly. But for those of you who haven't seen it, now is your opportunity to pause the podcast and go watch it.
Yes.
You're going to pause it now. Welcome back. I hope you loved it as much as I did, because I fucking love this movie.
And I hope you were stoned when you watched it, because goddamn, I was, and it was fucking hilarious.
I was also very stoned
yeah.
when I watched it. I don't know if that impacts whether or not I thought it was as great as I did when I was a child, but I definitely thought it was just as good.
It made me like Shaggy and Scooby a lot more. That's for sure.
I definitely hated Scooby and Shaggy as a child, but now, like, as an adult, I'm just like, oh.
Dude, they're getting all that contraband, yeah?
They're eating all the contraband. Also, like, as a kid, the food in this movie
oh
looked
my God.
So fucking good.
The peppers!
The peppers, but also, like, when Fred is, like, eating the gumbo and mm-hmm. eating these biscuits and he's just saying how good everything is. I'm like, I want to eat this. And especially as someone who just came back from vacation in New Orleans.
Yeah, that's true. You have a taste of reference.
I'm just like, oh, it's so good. But he's right.
Even the sandwiches, though. I know. Like, damn, that is some lettuce in there.
It looks so good. But anyway, enough waxing poetic, yeah. I guess, about the food. We'll get into it later. But the IMDb synopsis is as follows. The Mystery Gang reunite and visit Moonscar Island, a remote island with a dark secret. Daphne wants more than just a villain in a costume, and they get more than they ever expected. Very accurate, ominous.
Accurate, actually, yeah.
So this film was directed by Jim Stenstrom, produced by Cosmo Anzalotti.
I love that fucking name so much.
Screenplay by Glenn Leopold. Story by Glenn Leopold and Davis Doy. And based on Scooby-Doo by Joe Ruby and Ken Spears.
Dude, these guys have rock star fucking names right there.
And of course, our cast of characters. Obviously, these are all voices. This is an animated movie. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't get a live action Scooby-Doo film until, I believe, 2002?
Is it around that? I think so.
Yeah. It came out on my birthday in 2002.
Okay, damn.
So
this is okay. So in 2 more years, that's when we're doing the live action. Gotcha.
And so we have Scott Innes as Scooby Doo, the voice of Billy West as the voice of Norville Shaggy Rogers.
Fucking Fry himself.
Mary Kay Bergman as Daphne Blake. Frank Welker as Fred Jones. B.J. Ward as Velma Dinkley. Adrienne Barbeau as Simone Lenoir. Tara Strong as Lena Dupree, most people might know, as she voices pretty much a character on every Cartoon Network show ever.
Oh, does she?
Yeah, she was the voice of, like, Bubbles on Powerpuff Girls. She was the voice of, she did a couple voice on, like, Teen Titans. Like, she's pretty well known, at least for me anyway. I know who she is. Cam Clark for Detective Beau Neville. Jim Cummings for the voice of Jax, Morgan Moonscar, and the Plantationer.
Okay.
Which there's like a lot of Southern racism here. There's a lot of plantations and Southern Confederacy stuff.
Oh yeah, surprising amount for a children's movie.
I know. Yeah. And Mark Hamill as Snakebite Scruggs.
Who's that guy?
He's in the film for... I
was saying, who's Mark Hamill? I know who Snakebite Scruggs is.
Well, no, I'm also saying, because he's in the film for approximately 30 seconds.
Yeah.
But I went as far down on the IMDb list as I had to include Mark Hamill. Yeah.
But by the way, guys, I have a Star Wars poster in my room. I know who Mark Hamill is. I'm being facetious.
Thank you for including that, because we don't need the Star Wars nerds, like, you know, giving us a bunch of one-star reviews.
Does he just watch stabby stuff? Jesus! Billy West, though, dude. Fuck yeah. That's Philip J. Fry right there. Zap Brannigan, all that stuff. See Futurama?
I don't watch adult animation.
Billy West has also done a bunch of other stuff, too.
The name looks familiar.
He's in every cartoon also. Every fucking cartoon. Like, what you just told me right now with Tara Strong, same shit with Billy West.
Okay, see? Yeah. So we have a similar thing.
Yes.
It was distributed by Warner Home Video, and it was released on September 22nd, 1998. This was the first of 4 direct-to-video feature-length Scooby-Doo films from the late 90s and early 2000s. It also premiered on Cartoon Network on Halloween in 1998 as
Interesting. I don't remember distinctively getting it on VHS, but not seeing it on Halloween. So that's interesting.
I'm pretty sure I watched it on VHS, because it was one of those things where, like, growing up, I was allowed to watch Scooby-Doo, so I consumed as much of it as humanly possible.
Yes.
So, before we go into the film itself, I wanted to take this as an opportunity to kind of go down memory lane and go through a somewhat brief history of Scooby-Doo, and Anthony is going to take us on this journey.
You know how I love long gestating history.
And this is just like an hors d'oeuvre of Scooby-Doo history.
Yeah.
Like, if you want the full course, like, meal of Scooby-Doo history, let us know.
We can do it.
And we'll do a full history of Scooby-Doo on one of the other episodes.
Eventually.
Not, like, anytime soon, because we have, like, the next year and a half planned out.
We have a lot planned. Yeah, exactly. We have a method to our madness here. Also, by the way, Billy West was the voice of, he replaced not just Shaggy, but Bugs Bunny. in anything beyond up until Space Jam, I believe. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So
now I know.
Yeah. All right.
But anyway, so take it away.
All right. Let's see. So we got ourselves a brief history of Scooby-Doo. You motherfuckers ready? Let's do it. All right. Scooby-Doo is an American animated franchise, obviously, comprising many animated television series produced from 1969 to the present day. Writers Joe Ruby and Ken Spears created the original series, Scooby-Doo, Where Are You?, for Hanna-Barbera Productions in 1969. Jesus yeah. Christ.
Which was the year my dad was born.
Dude. It's 2019 right now. Yeah. That's a lot of years. 50? It's 50, right?
Yeah.
Fucking A. 50-year-old cartoon. Cool. This Saturday morning cartoon series featured four teenagers, Fred Jones, Daphne Blake, Velma Dinkley, and Norville Shaggy Rogers, and their talking Great Dane named Scooby-Doo, who solve mysteries involving apparent supernatural entities through a series of classic antics that have since been cemented into pop culture. You should know who Scooby-Doo is.
I didn't want to include this, but it felt like if we're doing a history, this is it.
In case you didn't know, and you're like, those cartoons look cool. What's this episode about? It's about like the most iconic cartoon in like 50 years.
Yeah. Everyone knows Scooby-Doo.
Right, like. Yeah. Hanna-Barbera Productions might ring a bell, though. And their brief history is as follows. Again, Hanna-Barbera is a fucking institution. So brief, guys. Hanna-Barbera Productions Incorporated, or simply known as Hanna-Barbera.
Hanna-Barbera.
Damn it. We're keeping that in. All right. Also known as Hanna-Barbera, was an American animation studio founded in 1957 by Tom and Jerry creators and former Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer animation directors William Hanna and Joseph Barbera, of the namesake, clearly, in partnership with film director George Sidney. They were hugely responsible for the Saturday morning cartoon phenomena of the late 50s, 60s, 70s, and through the mid-80s, but a little bit of the 90s, too, just so you know. we can thank them for cartoon behemoths such as, and you fuckers should know this, The Flintstones, The Yogi Bear Show, The Jetsons, Wacky Races, The Smurfs, and, of course, Scooby-Doo, Where Are You?, by the mid-80s, the profitability of Saturday morning cartoons fucking tanked and was taken over by the weekday afternoon cartoon.
So even though you want to say it went into the
90s,
profitability-wise, it hadn't really gone there. Like, I mean, yeah. I remember Saturday morning cartoons being a thing, but mm-hmm. I mean, there was the competing market or the competing time slot was absolutely weekday afternoons.
Oh, yeah. Like, I remember weekday afternoons more.
Yeah.
I remember it more. Although, very early in the 90s, I used to watch a show called Beast Wars, which was a Transformers spinoff. It was a CGI show. And their new episodes would be on Saturday morning the Fox block.
Oh, okay. I watched a lot. Like, I think my Saturday morning wasn't even cartoons. It was like mostly like Power Rangers.
Yeah, stuff like that I remember was also there too. Although Power Rangers did have a big, strong weekday slot. Because I remember O.J. Simpson's trial fucked up an episode of mine and I was so pissed.
God damn it,
OJ I was Simpson. So mad. Yeah, no, I was like, what the fuck is this car chase? Little me, what the fuck is this car chase?
Now you're just like, oh man.
I'm like, dude, I was so mad.
Oh, I remember that with Casey Anthony.
Oh, really? Oh, my God.
I remember, like, not really giving a fuck at the time, which is weird, because, like, that was, like, during my true crime, like, fascination phase in the beginning, because I was in, like, sixth grade, because this is in, like, 2006-ish, if I recall correctly, and I just remember being, like, I don't give a fuck, Casey Anthony, and now I'm just, like, I fucking hate Casey Anthony.
Oh, my God. I do, too, but it's kind of hilarious the difference in our years makes, because O.J. Simpson was my Casey Anthony. Oh, little me was just, like, no, I need to see what happens to the pig monster, and what is the Green Ranger going to come in?
Yeah.
but no, because of what happened to the decline in profitability for Saturday morning cartoons, Hanna-Barbera's profitability and fortunes also declined pretty significantly by that point. So Turner Broadcasting System purchased the studio from Taft, by then renamed Great American Broadcasting, in late 1991, and primarily used the back catalog as programming for, you guys love this fucking shit, I know I do, Cartoon Network! By the way, as a kid from the 90s, like, I remember Nickelodeon, and only knowing it, but Cartoon Network coming into the scene was like, I have options? what is this?
Yeah, Nickelodeon and Cartoon Network were, like, obviously the two big competing, like, you know how the, well, I think, I don't even know how what I would compare it to now, because everything is so widely available.
Yeah.
But it was very, like, divisive. Like, it was like, are you a Cartoon Network or are you a Nickelodeon person?
Absolutely. No. It like, fucking
it
was.
Like, it was like a fandom war. Like.
Well, see, I was entrenched in Nickelodeon, but there was three shows that Cartoon Network just, I was like, I gradually was moving back to it. Was Johnny Bravo, Dexter's Laboratory, and the Powerpuff Girls.
Okay, for those me, three. It was Powerpuff Girls, Scooby-Doo, and Courage the Cowardly Dog.
Courage with the shit, yeah.
Like, those were my shows, and, like, they were just, like, so good. I like, Powerpuff Girls was obviously, like, just, like, my shit.
Yeah, Powerpuff Girls was fucking awesome. Yeah. But actually, you know what the dividing line was? Because before that, I was Rocko's Modern Life, Rugrats, Doug.
And, okay, I did also love Rugrats.
Oh, you never watched Rock? Oh, you're way younger.
Well, it wasn't really my thing. Like, it was, like, geared towards, like, older kids.
I guess it was? I don't know. I watched it. It came out when I was very tiny, so it just destroyed my world.
Yeah, and then Avro
Monsters. Avro Monsters, yeah. But,
that one was, like, almost too scary for me as a kid.
Oh, I loved it so much. But,
again, significantly younger.
Yeah, we're big, like, difference. Yeah.
Four.
No, but what happened was Disney bought Doug. And then Nickelodeon just started getting shit pulled away from it. And then, what do you know? Dexter's Laboratory seems pretty cool. And
I
then
love Dexter's Laboratory.
Butch Hartman did end up doing Fairly Odd Parents, which I also love. So it just, it all mixed.
This is just like a trip down memory lane.
It is. Isn't it? Okay, yeah, we're in the barely beginning of history here. okay, let's go back. Sorry, team. but after Turner had purchased the company, Hanna-Barbera continued to serve as creative consultants and mentors. So they were still involved creatively.
And this is great because they totally had the option to just be totally fucked over and be cut out. But I think, I mean, they created Tom and Jerry.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
So I think they were kind of recognized for their creative capabilities, and it's just like, we're not gonna ice these people out.
No, yeah, they define what a cartoon is, and people still didn't 100% understand what a cartoon could be.
Yeah.
They might as well have the anchor there. Yeah, that makes total sense.
Yeah.
But after becoming a subsidiary of Warner Brothers Animation in 1996, following Turner's merger with Time Warner, it was ultimately absorbed into Warner Brothers Animation in 2001, when William Hanna passed away, unfortunately. But as of 2019, Warner Brothers distributes Hanna-Barbera cartoons, including the back catalog, and plays them often.
Hell
back
yeah.
to Scooby-Doo, and they played them on the Boomerang Network a lot. Yeah, yeah, that's the one.
Boomerang was, like, really odd for me, because I would watch it for Scooby-Doo and, like, the Jetsons, but that was about it, because I wasn't a big Flintstones fan, and I wasn't, like, a big Yogi Bear fan.
I did like those when I was a kid, actually.
I wasn't a huge fan of them, but I really loved Scooby-Doo, and I really did enjoy the Jetsons.
Yeah, I like the Jetsons more than the Flintstones and Yogi Bear. Yeah. Although, there was something about Yogi's assholery that I thought, as a kid, was fucking hilarious.
It annoyed the fuck out of me.
I don't know why, I was like...
I think I just got this from my mom, but I was just like, why is he such a dick?
He is a dick, though, he is.
But, and it just annoyed me. I was just like, why would I watch this? Because it just made me frustrated. Like, any show that, like, built up frustration. Because I think that's what I liked about Scooby-Doo, is because what I think ultimately drew me to horror, actually, is that it creates tension, but resolves it by the end of it.
Yes.
And I think that's what I love so much about it, is that it has that resolution. So I'm like, okay, I'm frustrated, but, like, by the end of it, I feel okay.
Yeah, because Yogi Bear, he just keeps his dick out by the end, well, and that's
why Looney Tunes, also, and Tom and Jerry bugged me. Because, like, Tom and Jerry, they're just constantly dickheads to each other.
That's true. There is no story there.
There's no story because they don't talk.
But, I loved Looney Tunes back then so much.
I like parts of Looney Tunes.
Fucking Speedy Gonzalez was my people right there.
But anyway, back to
Scooby-Doo. Okay, so we got the CBS years coming up, and those were, this is early on. So in 1969 through 76, Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? The first episode of Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? Was called what? What a Night for a Night.
Yes.
Debuted on the CBS network Saturday morning, September 13th, 1969.
Hell yeah.
Fucking A, that's a long ass time ago. Each of these episodes features Scooby and the four teenage members of the Mystery Inc. Of Mystery Inc.? I love Mystery Inc. Fred, Shaggy, Daphne, and Velma, of course, arriving at a location in the Mystery Machine. A van painted with psychedelic colors and flower power imagery evocative of the era the show comes from. The end of the era.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, an encapsulation of hippie culture for sure.
Well, they're also all kind of dressed kind of hippie-ish.
Mm-hmm. Hippie-ish, yeah.
Hippie adjacent.
Except, you know, Fred would turn into, like, fucking 80s businessman at point.
Yeah. He's wearing, like, an ascot.
Yeah.
He's a teenager.
He's like, fucking hippies, yeah? They encounter a ghost, a monster, or other obnoxiously supernatural creature terrorizing the local population of whatever town they happen to fucking get around there. Because fuck high school, you know? Stay in school with those, seriously. Don't fucking quit academics to become an Instagram model or some influencer or some shit. Like get your credentials, at least, because you don't want to...
At least finish high school.
Yeah, you don't want to do that, not, like, get ugly, and then suddenly you're working at Arby's. All right, that's Daphne went into reporting.
She became an she went into investigative journalism.
Yeah, exactly. See, follow the Daphne path. But they typically decide to investigate said ooky spooky bullshit. The kids split up to look for clues and suspects while being chased by the monster in their individual turns. Eventually, though, the kids come to realize the ghost or other paranormal activity, here dubbed once again ooky spooky bullshit, is actually an elaborate hoax, and often with the help of some contraption, they capture the villain and unmask him. That is the formula.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
it's a good formula.
It is. Because, I mean, okay, compared to other Hanna-Barbera shit, there was a mystery. Like, you had to figure out who did it. Yeah.
And there's, a mystery to it, but I think, because it's in half an hour, so obviously it's very... Yeah. Tightly condensed.
But they always give you, like, a couple suspects. So as a kid, I was always like...
Who could it be?
Yeah, it's obviously this person.
Obviously, as a tiny child, like, and you don't have the critical thinking skills of an adult, you're just like, huh?
You're like, whoa.
You're, like, glued to the fucking TV, just like, oh, God.
But she was so nice.
Yeah.
But this is almost always revealed as a flesh and blood crook of a person trying to cover up crimes by using a ghost story and costume. The criminal is arrested and taken to jail, often repeating something nearly identical to. And I would have gotten away with it too if it hadn't been for you meddling kids.
Fucking iconic!
And that dog, too, was typically followed up.
Yeah.
But some fun crimes committed on Scooby-Doo in no particular order include trespassing, breaking and entering, harassment, attempted murder, assault, impersonating law enforcement, mass murder, fraud, identity theft, grand theft, and it just goes on because...
Yeah. Well, also, keep in mind, these are high school students. Like, yeah. In the original, iteration, of course. But these are high school students, so right? I just felt the need to include, like, they are, like, where's the police?
Yeah, because typically the only illicit activities is just, like, drug use.
Yeah, like, it's...
And someone gets beat up sometimes, you know? That's it. That's typically what you know as a high school student.
Good Lord.
But this time they're dealing with, like, oh, shit, like, there's some Criminal Minds bullshit. I see why you like it now.
It's pre-K Criminal Minds.
Pre-K Criminal... I love that. Okay, pre-K Criminal Minds with some stoner humor thrown in there, for sure.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Every episode of the original Scooby-Doo format contains a scene in which the kids unmask the ghost of the week to reveal a real person in a costume. This lulled us children into a sense of security by assuring us that by the end of every episode... We would know that the supernatural creature was just a person, which would go on to create generations of children with social anxiety.
I think this is absolutely true.
I'm staring at one right now, yes.
I added the social anxiety bit. Of course, I'm, like, exaggerating a tiny bit, but, like...
Be suspicious. Hey, you don't know.
They're people.
You don't fucking know.
But I think this is, like, a great point, though, because, like, literally, like, every single person in the original Scooby-Doo, like, was, like, every ghost was, like, a person being evil.
Yeah, I think, honestly, with Scooby-Doo and also growing up with Captain Planet, it just made me hate industrialists a lot. Because it was always somebody with, like, a business incentive to terrorize people. Yeah, that's
true. It was, like, very, like...
I need to make
Scooby-Doo was surprisingly anti-capitalist, too.
What? Well, yeah, fucking Shaggy in there smoking out of this fucking van.
But do you see what I mean?
No, though? Exactly.
Because, like, it's also, like, they're always, like, these, like this hedge fud... hedge fudge.
Hedge fudge.
But, like, hedge fund manager or whatever the fuck, like, or business manager. Or,
yeah,
like,
somebody getting a profit out of people suffering.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like, or some counterfeiter in the basement. That kind of shit.
With Captain Planet also, again, I was, and then, what was the other one? Captain Planet, Scooby-Doo. There was one more, Magic School Bus. That was just educational.
I would say Miss Frizzle was very...
She's pretty liberal.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was pretty liberal. That's true. And she's very environmental.
And then, what's her face from Recess? The teacher from Recess.
Oh, I forget her fucking name. I only remember the kids mostly. Mm-hmm.
But you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah.
The teacher from Recess was also very like, and this is why. And then we slaughtered all the Native Americans.
Yeah. And Spinelli's just like, I don't give a shit. Oh, fucking love this episode. All right. Just talking about cartoons. But again, early cartoons here now. But in 1972, new one-hour episodes under the title The New Scooby-Doo Movies were created. Each episode featuring a real or fictitious guest star helping the gang solve mysteries. I remember this shit really
this
well, actually.
This was ridiculous.
I remember this one a lot.
This was fucking ridiculous.
This is probably my main Scooby-Doo memories, actually, right here.
Really?
Yeah, I remember because of the guests. This actually had other characters from other Hanna-Barbera series and celebrity guests, which it beat The Simpsons to, because they would flood this shit with... but some of the guests of the new Scooby-Doo movies include the Harlem Globetrotters, which I remember very vividly, that one.
Yeah,
because they did Futurama later on, same shit.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Josie and the Pussycats, the comic book characters Batman and Robin, and their comic book iterations, the Addams Family, and the Three Stooges.
It sounds so strange. But this also set a precedent because they did something, like, they did something similar. Like, I know SpongeBob did something similar.
Mm-hmm.
They did a crossover. And I know Fairly Odd Parents and...
And The Simpsons did it twice.
No, I know Fairly Odd Parents did it with another Nickelodeon TV show. Like, they did a crossover.
Like, super crossover.
Yeah, they crossed over with, like, TV shows where, like, Timmy Turner went into... a different universe. Jimmy Neutron.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, it was Jimmy Neutron. Thank you. Oh, God, I knew. Someone's
fucking
yelling.
Love Jimmy
someone's
Neutron.
Someone's fucking yelling at their phone right now. Like,
it's somebody who loves the character Sheen. He's doing the voice.
Someone's yelling
How
at
could
the...
you not remember?
it was Jimmy Neutron and Fairly Odd Parents. They did a crossover like they went into their own universe. And I remember being freaked out because the animation styles are completely different.
Yeah, the way... Because Timmy Turner does not look good in CG.
No.
He does not look good in CG.
No. This is what set the precedent for, you know, these things that would come up later on. And of course, you know, The Simpsons and, like, Family Guy would beat this into the fucking dirt.
See, the thing is, The Simpsons tried to subvert it a lot in their early years because they did it with The Critic, which was a big show in the 90s, but they didn't go on The Critic. And the character, his name's Jay Sherman, was like, maybe you'll come on my show one day. And then Bart's like, no. like, that's not going to happen. But I mean, you know, again, that's just an evolution of animation. But this is the proto stages of what we'd come to know, obviously. Which is,
one
again,
day,
yeah.
We should definitely do an episode on one of, like, your, like,
Treehouse of Horror. I already have it in my head. No, we're good. We're doing that. Not this Halloween, because we got that planned. But at some point, that's got to happen. Because I can give you fuckers some Simpsons history for sure.
No, I think that would be fun. Because, like, you just light up anytime we talk about the Simpsons. Yeah,
exactly. Hanna-Barbera musical director Hoyt Curtin, cool fucking name.
Hoyt's a good name.
Yeah, composed a new theme song for this series. And Curtin's theme would remain in use for much of Scooby-Doo's original broadcast run. After two seasons and 24 episodes of the new movies format from 1972 to 1973, CBS began airing reruns of the original Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? Series, until its option on the series ran out in 1976, less than 10 years. Fuck.
I know. I thought it was longer, but yeah, it's not.
Same here. But, of course, that would come into around the ABC years now, which would be encompass a lot more time, 1976 to 1991. But they experimented a lot with form and crossovers in this era, including new characters from across Hanna-Barbera family. Lots of new mini-TV shows in an attempt to save the show's diminishing popularity.
So I believe the show had 13, like, iterations, because they mentioned it in the YouTube video that we watched for this.
Yeah.
But I believe it's 13, and this is where we get most of them, and I didn't want to go into each of them, but they're there. We'll go into it.
There's some notable ones.
Yeah, we're going to go into a couple of them, but if you are, if you, the listener, are very interested, let us know, and we'll go into it, because some of them are cool. I highlighted some.
But. Yeah, let's see what the big dogs are over here. Big dogs.
That was a horrible joke.
That was natural, all right? That was natural shittiness right there.
You should be ashamed. Anyway.
But most notably, the classic Scooby-Doo characters appeared outside of their regular Saturday morning format in Scooby-Doo Goes to Hollywood, an hour-long ABC television special aired during prime time. Scooby Goes Hollywood. I just naturally put the "do" there. But this aired during prime time in 1979. The special revolved around Shaggy and Scooby attempting to convince the network to move Scooby out of quickly dying Saturday morning time slot and into primetime series.
Which is like, this is...
It's meta.
Really meta. Yeah. And again, what time frame was this? 1979?
Dude, I bet you Matt Groening was watching this shit and just like, I'm going to subvert everything. But it features spoofs on then current television series and films, such as Happy Days, Superman the Movie, Laverne and Shirley, and of course, Charlie's Angels.
This just dates it so much. So much.
That was like prime shit right there.
Right, of course. At the time, this was like super popular and very hip and happening. And I'm sure at the time it was very popular, but I'm just like, oh my gosh.
I feel like Happy Days, considering the disparity in era, is like the Stranger Things of its time. Because it's like a representation of like decades before.
Yeah.
But in 1979, Scooby's tiny... Oh, I fucking hate this guy. Tiny nephew, Scrappy-Doo, was added...
The venom in your voice when you're just like, tiny fucking nephew.
Right, let's redo the sentence. In 1979, Scooby's tiny piece of shit fucking nephew, Scrappy-Doo, was added to both the series and the billing in an attempt to boost Scooby-Doo's slip-in ratings. Scrappy-Doo would later become a staple of the series after the resounding success of adding his character.
So, this is important for me personally, as a Ute, because...
Fucking Cousin Vinny reference, nice.
Yes. I distinctly remember growing up, starting an episode of Scooby-Doo, and if Scrappy was in it, I would turn off the episode. Yeah. Like, that's how much, because I loved Scooby-Doo, but I fucking hated Scrappy. He annoyed the fuck out of me.
I would actually watch until maybe the second time he says, Scrappy-Doo! And then that's it.
Your threshold.
Yeah, I'm
done.
Just like, you can get one in there. And I think I would remember that being a good episode if he was, like, not that heavy in it, because I still love Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
But Scrappy really shit the bed, dude. I fucking hate that guy.
What's so fucked up is that, like, he saved the series. Or he saved the franchise.
Yeah, I know. We have him to thank for it, although I know he's become a running joke. Deservedly. But as a result of Scooby-Doo and Scrappy-Doo's success, the entire show was overhauled in 1980 to focus more upon Scrappy-Doo. At this time, Scooby-Doo started to walk and run anthropomorphically on 2 feet more often, rather than on 4 like a normal dog as he did previously. Fred, Daphne, and Velma were dropped from the series, and the new Scooby-Doo and Scrappy-Doo format now consisted of 3 7-minute comedic adventures starring Scooby, Scrappy, and Shaggy instead of 1 half-hour mystery. I think this is why I hated this bullshit, to be honest with you. Where's Fred?
Where's, like, literally the only other characters that I enjoy? Because at the time, as a child, I did not like Shaggy.
Mm-hmm. No?
No. Okay. I just thought he was, like, I just didn't like his character.
Yeah.
Now I tolerate him. But also, I think that has something to do with the fact that I thought Matthew Lillard in the live action was fucking hilarious.
Yeah, he's good.
I was just like, okay, now I tolerate it. Also, now as someone who does smoke weed on a regular basis, I think I kind of understand him a little bit more.
We've all met a Shaggy. Yeah, that's true. Although, I will say, even Kid Me was like, I was always rooting for Velma because she got no play.
Yeah.
Always. I was like, can Velma have, like, a victory?
Please.
Like, can she get be the one to just, like, I stopped everything?
Yeah.
But no, it was always Scooby doing some bullshit.
No, I was Velma for Halloween this year, and I was just, and everyone was just like, you look just like her! And I'm just like, thank you.
You're like, that was the intention.
It's called a costume. Yeah.
You don't look like Velma at all. This costume, shit. But in 1985, saw the debut of the 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo, which featured Daphne, Shaggy, Scooby, Scrappy, and new characters, including Vincent Van Gool. Oh, God, I heard that name in so fucking long. Vincent Van Gool, based upon and voiced by Vincent Price. That's right. The final first run episode of the 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo aired in 1985, and after its reruns were removed from the ABC lineup the following March, no Scooby-Doo series aired on the network for the next 2 years. So
no
temporarily
new Scooby-Doo.
Canceled. Yeah, no new Scooby-Doo, yeah.
So I only included this, one, because it included that important bit about no new Scooby-Doo, mm-hmm. but also Vincent fucking Price.
Vincent Price, dude. Oh, Vincent Van Gool, man, fuck. That actually brought me back reading that.
I know.
It's been a while. Okay. Hanna-Barbera reincarnated the original Scooby-Doo, Where Are You, cast as elementary school students. A very common trope in 1980s children's TV and a little bit of 90s too, Tiny Toon Adventures, for a new series titled A Pup Named Scooby-Doo, which I totally fucking remember, which debuted in 1988. A Pup Named Scooby-Doo was an irreverent reimagining of the series, focusing on the Looney Tunes aesthetics that were popular at the time. Yes, this was actually one that you would watch waiting for Tiny Toons, or like if Tiny Toons was on an episode you'd seen.
I tolerated A Pup Named Scooby-Doo. I thought it was like a little bit too like childish for me.
Because it probably was.
I was very like, meh, 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 meh. Yeah. I'm mature for my age. Meh, 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 meh. Yeah. I was like fucking,
I don't even
like,
watch
five.
Fucking babies.
Yeah, so.
Muppet Babies was also around this time.
So,
yeah, Muppet Babies.
I have a false memory around watching Muppet Babies.
Really?
Yeah. It's really weird. I'll tell you about it later.
No, tell us now. The audience needs to hear what the fuck
happened.
So,
I have the most distinct memory of owning, like, this very specific film regarding Muppet Babies and, mm-hmm. like, watching it on VHS at my grandma's house and, like, I remember specific scenes and like, but not enough that I could like tell you what happened.
Yeah.
I cannot find this movie for the fucking life of me.
It might have just been a VHS recording of like 3 episodes.
It could have been.
Yeah.
I think that's what it was.
That's probably what it was.
But I need to find it because I remember loving it with my whole heart.
Dude.
And I remember trying to explain it to my mom and I think she thought I was on drugs.
Oh no.
And I'm just like, Mom. It was a VHS, and we were at my grandma's, and she was just like, what are you talking about? Because she wasn't, like, a big, like, anthropomorphic type person. Like, she didn't like that kind of stuff. It kind of bugged her. Like, it just annoyed her. So I didn't watch a lot of, like, talking animal type stuff, mm-hmm. which is probably the reason why I don't like talking animal movies to this day.
Yeah, that makes sense. Plus, they kind of suck now, so.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But even, like, I barely got away with watching Stuart Little as a kid. Like,
oh, I forgot about Stuart. That was past my time.
I really enjoyed Stuart Little, mm-hmm. though. But anyway, but I just, I am not sure if it's, like, a real memory or if it's, like, a couple episodes, like, tied in, but mm-hmm. Was there like a Muppet Babies in Space?
I think it was just Muppets in Space. I'm not
sure if
it's because
there's
Muppets
in Space, yeah. And then there's Muppet Babies, and I think
they
probably went
to space for an episode.
Maybe yeah. I might have combined it, but the point is, this is my fake manufactured memory that I'm still working through, and I'm not sure how real parts of it are.
I know when we're done with this, I'm looking up that opening theme song for Muppet Babies. That was a freaking trip, right? Oh my gosh. That and Tiny Toons, but I remember Tiny Toons pretty vividly, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tiny Toons briefly made an appearance into my life, but yeah. Oh man, what a throwback.
Jesus, for reals. This my screen that I read the script off fans is actually dimming from the amount of sides we're taking to talk about these fucking cartoons. But at the same time, the series returned to its original formula in that the group unmasked human villains in costume, as opposed to the supernatural monsters of the early to mid-1980s.
What were they doing? Like, tackling, like, third graders?
I don't fucking know.
Like, it's not like they were, like, tackling adults.
Yeah. Yeah, other third graders like, no, you hid the candy. Fuck you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this finally brings us to the reboots and reruns era from 1987 to present day.
Heck yeah.
And Alex is going to bring us into it because this is exactly where we get some Zombie Island this shit. Is, yeah. Which is why you're here. It's why you're here, right?
This is why you're here. So that's a history. It is important. We bring up parts of it later, I promise. But yes. Also, it's just fun.
Yeah. And if you guys want a very comprehensive Scooby-Doo episode, we'll post about it and you comment.
And we can talk about like the character design for all of the characters.
We can get to the cast, dude. Yeah, yeah, we can do everything.
We can do all of it. Mm-hmm. Your wish is our command.
Yeah, in like 2 years, dude. We'll see how it turns out.
Okay, we don't have like the next 2 years planned out, but like we'll get to it eventually. Yeah, well,
exactly.
Scooby-Doo had renewed popularity in the early 90s after A Pup Named Scooby-Doo and Scooby-Doo Where Are You began reruns on Cartoon Network shortly after A Pup Named Scooby-Doo finished its television run. By 1996, networks were looking at ways to cash in on this new interest, and thus the direct-to-video movies were suggested.
Direct-to-video era is around that time. Yeah. Man, did we get some good shit.
We did. In 1998, we get the slightly older version of the original Scooby-Doo gang in Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island, and that's just the first one. Every year after, for the next 3 years, we got a new movie. Scooby-Doo and the Witch's Ghost from 1999, Scooby-Doo and the Alien Invaders from the year 2000, and Scooby-Doo and the Cyber Chase, arguably the worst one out of the four, from 2001.
The animation changes pretty distinctively between them.
Definitely.
Too.
Yeah. I like the concept of Scooby-Doo and the Cyber Chase because this is actually when you get the original Scooby-Doo Where Are You members coming in to the 20th or 21st century.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's a great concept. I remember not being super into it, but again, also at this time, I was like six or seven.
Yeah, baby edgelord features are coming out right there.
I was already just like angry at everything. But yeah, so these first four direct-to-video films differed from the original series format by placing the characters in plots with a darker tone and pitting them against actual supernatural forces. But for the sake of brevity, we'll be focusing on Zombie Island as it is arguably the best one out of the four.
Yeah, I came into age of that being like the best, and then uh-huh. afterwards, I don't know, puberty happened,
and then you just hated everything.
Then I hated everything, yeah.
The film screenplay was written by Glenn Leopold of Nickelodeon's Doug, and writer for 1980s Scooby series, Davis Doy, then a writer for Hanna-Barbera's production Dexter's Laboratory, also contributed to the final script. So.
As we gushed earlier about each of those things, but but again, as a reminder, kids from the 90s. We're going to do the 90s kids bullshit right here. If y'all were a fan of the Disney Doug, you need to not listen to this podcast anymore, because that was shit.
Oh, my God.
Nickelodeon's Doug was the video channel we watched. Like, I'll link you to a Doug video.
Okay.
So that you can see the big difference there.
No, Doug wasn't super my thing.
Yeah. But the difference in quality, like, it's very noticeable, even on, like, an artistic level.
Oh, yeah,
like, it's
I'm sure.
crazy. Anyways, that was my little soapbox right there.
Yeah. Scott Innes replaced original voice actor Don Messick as the voice of Scooby-Doo. This film actually is dedicated to the memory of Don Messick, as he agreed to do the voice of Scooby-Doo but passed away shortly after.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Casey Kasem did not reprise his role as Shaggy Rogers, as he wished to only voice Shaggy if the character became a vegetarian like himself. This also happened again in Cyber Chase, where he agreed to do the voice of Shaggy, but then later declined because the promotions for the film required him to do a Burger King commercial.
Oh, okay, I can dig that. Burger King.
So instead, Billy West provided the voice for Shaggy. Mary Kay Bergman was cast as Daphne when the character was taken in a new direction. BJ Ward, who played Velma in the Johnny Bravo crossover episode, reprised her role in this film. So there was also a Scooby-Doo Johnny Bravo crossover.
I don't remember that.
But that sounds potentially interesting.
It does sound like something Kid Me would have loved, because I love both of those shows.
Oh, really?
A lot. Yeah.
Frank Welker was the only actor from the original series to reprise his role.
I would say if there's any one actor to get, it would be Frank fucking Welker. You can't jock Fred.
No, that's true.
No, dude, nobody can fucking capture Fred like Frank Welker.
That's true. The film was directed by Jim Stenstrom, who worked as a character designer on numerous previous Scooby-Doo productions, beginning in 1983 with The New Scooby-Doo and Scrappy-Doo Show. Hiroshi Aomiya and Kazumi Fukushima directed the film as well, but are not credited on the picture. So what the fuck?
Yeah. Dudes.
But we're going to credit them. They worked on
it. Yeah, they helped like create this thing of our childhood, all right, guys?
Yeah. Production started at Hanna-Barbera, the company that obviously originally created Scooby-Doo, but was finished at Warner Brothers Animation. Hanna-Barbera's operations had moved to the Warner Brothers Television Animation building in 1998. So there's a lot going on. Obviously, mm-hmm. Hanna-Barbera kind of was moved around a lot. It's been in production for so long mm-hmm. that there's a lot going on. Though they would go on to produce all following Scooby-Doo direct-to-video movies, though the Scooby-Doo concept is still copyrighted to Hanna-Barbera, obviously.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's still their dog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, because there's just so much mounting respect for Hanna-Barbera.
Yeah.
I think any like company that purchases the rights to it mm-hmm. still attribute the rights to Hanna-Barbera, as people in the company.
Mm-hmm.
They just, instead of taking away the copyright, they just absorb the company.
Yeah.
So that way they're still able to distribute it, but attributing rights to the original producer or
That's
creators.
That's true. And they have the Hanna-Barbera name attached that Scooby-Doo.
Exactly. So they also get the notoriety attached mm-hmm. to the Hanna-Barbera name. So these films had a different twist than the notably lighthearted original series and spinoffs. The gang was older and the stories were much darker. The marketing for Zombie Island emphasized this fact over and over and over.
Yeah, no, this got me to rent it. Yep.
This time the monsters are real, the mm-hmm. advertisements would say. Terrifying children across the country, because how could the team go up against a real-life supernatural creature and come out unscathed? Again, it kind of lays out all the cards, because we're getting zombies, we're getting, like...
voodoo shit.
Yeah, we're getting werecats, like, we're getting a lot in this film. So, there's a lot the team has to go up against.
And ghosts.
Yeah. Yeah, you're getting ghosts, you're getting werecats, you're getting zombies, like, there's a lot.
Oh, and then alligators eat, like... A society.
Yeah, a whole group of, like pagan-coded people.
Oh,
like,
wow.
However, it is worth noting that Scooby writers had introduced real supernatural elements into the franchise back in 1980 with the second season of Scooby-Doo and Scrappy-Doo, possibly to avoid some of the show's formulaic trappings. These formulaic trappings are what is considered to be a downfall, or at least the weakest part of the Scooby-Doo franchise. Mm. A lot of people consider this to be the weakest part, because they kind of tell the same story over and over and over again with a different face.
I feel like 1980s kids that saw that it was like, oh, it's real, that probably is what saved it right there.
Yeah.
Like, right there. Yeah, Scrappy, fucking fine. All right.
There's a reliability in how the stories are tied up every episode with a wacky character shouting, and I would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for you meddling kids and your dumb dog or whatever it mm-hmm. said. And everyone laughs and it cuts to the end.
Yeah.
Zombie Island changed all that on a grander scale beyond Scooby and Scrappy. This was a mass-produced direct-to-video production that had almost $50 million in promotions behind it.
Damn.
So
that's big money right there, dude.
And this isn't the 80s. Like, we are talking, like, late 90s, peak consumerist, like, children, mm-hmm. direct, like... They are advertising to children at this point. I know this was, like, introduced, like, in the 80s, obviously, but, like, this is, like, it's reaching its peak at the 90s.
Well, I mean, back before then, I think we talked about this in another episode, you couldn't advertise to children. There were a lot of regulations behind that. Mm-hmm. But then good old Ronald Reagan came in there, so you can sell those little fuckers anything. That those standards went out.
Yeah.
And then we got... $50 million marketing campaign for us in the 90s because of that. Yeah.
Yeah, like Cartoon Network had it, like Wendy's, like it was like there was a lot.
Oh, I want my toys.
Let's see here. So this was the first storyline to focus on the original gang surprise at the monsters not being fake as a whole. As Fred, Velma, and Daphne were missing from the Scrappy and Scooby-Doo adventures. Zombie Island breaks with tradition in that sense, and it takes the overall aesthetics into a much darker place.
Very true. Good art on this one. Good art.
Yeah. No, I love, like, the aesthetics of this movie. I think mm-hmm. that's part of what drew me to it.
Yeah.
Definitely. And I, yeah, that's definitely one of the things that, like, ugh, I love it.
With our proclivity for dark shit, like, Ah, Real Monsters and all that. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a good, working with that, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Composer Stephen Bramson, who is known for Tiny Toon Adventures, JAG, and Lost in Space, or in the Lost in Space film, wrote all the music for the feature. The soundtrack for the film features three songs composed specifically for Zombie Island. The Ghost Is Here and It's Tarot Time Again, both written by Glenn Leopold, were performed by Sky Cycle. If that name rings a bell, it shouldn't. They're the only claim to fame is this movie, so no okay. career launch. Was
I was
here.
Wondering. I was like, "Who the fuck is Sky Cycle?"
I don't know. It shouldn't ring a bell. I looked them up. Like, it literally in the first thing on their IMDb, it's just like most notably from Scooby Doo on Zombie Island. So
I will say though, I remember the Lost in Space film with Matt LeBlanc that existed.
And that was a film that existed.
I'm pretty sure JAG was a show that one of my older relatives watched.
JAG was a Navy courtroom drama.
Okay. One of the older folks in the house watched it.
And of
it
course, Tiny Toon Adventures.
Tiny Toon Adventures. Yeah, that was my shit. Okay.
So the title track, Scooby-Doo, Where Are You?, was performed by Third Eye Blind.
Wow.
Who you might recognize as whiny teenagers in the 90s were screaming their music regularly.
Yep. And a little bit into the 2000s, a little bit. Just, I mean, you would get the residue of it.
Just a touch.
Yeah, just a little
just
bit.
Just a touch.
Third Eye Blind, Jesus fucking Christ.
And I love this, and it was kind of mentioned in the YouTube video we watched as well. Each of these four direct-to-video movies had a modern retelling of the title song, mm-hmm. and I think that's really cool.
They're all very distinctive, too.
I meant to look up who the other ones did, who the other three were, but I totally forgot.
That's fine. This is the best ones.
Yeah, so Third Eye Blind did this one, and I think that's very, very funny. But this was an attempt to bring the classic title track into the 21st century. Again, Zombie Island succeeds above all the rest in this category.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
Since the film's release in 1998, it has received actually primarily positive reviews and holds a current rating of 86% on Rotten Tomatoes out of 7 reviews.
Yeah, I was looking at some critic reviews and people loved it.
People
New York Times and people yeah, fucking loved it.
Like, it actually was critically, like, reviewed and, like, acknowledged, mm-hmm. which I think is fascinating.
Well, a lot of these reviewers, I'm sure, watched it as kids, so they're like, this is a subversion of a lot of shit I'm used to. Mm-hmm. Whoa. They were the audience.
Yeah. The film had received a following of fans who credit it for resurrecting the Scooby-Doo franchise and for being significantly darker than the original series, cementing itself in the memory of most millennials as their favorite Scooby-Doo film because of how much it scared them as a kid, followed up only with Witch's Ghost, which is the follow-up
next,
film,
next one, right?
Yeah, which was released a little over a year later. So Scooby-Doo and the Witch's Ghost was released on October 5th, 1999.
Interesting.
And this is the one that features the Hex Girls, and that's the one that I remember most notably because I thought they were cool as fuck, and I had a crush on all of them.
I was gonna say, that's the catalyst right there. That was it.
And I was definitely just like, oh my God.
By the time...
Because it was like this gothic, like, rock band of, like, all girls, and just like,
huh. You're like, black lipstick. Oh my God.
And I was like, oh my God, they're so beautiful. But that's pretty much it for
there you go,
that.
Guys.
Now we can discuss a little bit about the film. We can gush to our heart's content.
Can we? Let's gush right now because I fucking love this film.
We have so much time. We can talk as much as we want about this.
This movie's good.
So, thoughts on the film.
Okay, so thoughts on the film. This film, watching it again, so I'll have a little story here. Again, I watched Scooby-Doo as a kid a lot, but I, for years, did not know, I'd only seen this once, prior to watching it again, right?
Really?
Only once. It was the one time I rented it on VHS, and I remember the commercials, I remember the marketing, I remember going to the store, I remember watching it and being so fucking blown away by it. But we didn't rent it again, because we never rented movies over and over, we always rented new shit. But then I never saw it again, so for, my memory had been thinking about this film and trying to figure out what it was. For decades. For literal decades until you suggested it. And then when I looked it up later on after like realizing we're going to do it. It all started coming back. All fucking started coming back. And I loved this so much the one time I saw it as a kid. Like I really, really loved it. Like the fact that the monsters were real were cool. And then seeing it as an adult. The subversion of it is awesome because typically when you do these, like, oh, they're older now kind of things, there's conflict within the group and all this other bullshit,
there's,
like, drama.
Pettiness. There's people who, like, are just like, oh, I stopped talking to Daphne.
Yeah,
she's
exactly.
a backstabbing bitch.
Exactly. But this one, they're just like, Fred's like, hey, and the gang's here, and then let's not worry about that shit because we're fucking back. Because
they immediately just, like, get back together. Like,
yeah.
There's no, like, animosity.
Nothing. That was the best shit. As an adult, that was the fucking best.
That was
like,
cool.
I love that. Because
yeah.
they didn't waste any fucking time
at all.
Well,
some people, you know, and there was that criticism that as an adult, it's considered patronizing. And I was like, it's not, though.
No.
It's
hell
very,
no.
like, it's almost like soothing.
Yes, it's soothing, exactly.
It's like, it's just stimulating enough that it, like, it kept my attention, even though I was very stunned when I watched it.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it's not, like, it doesn't feel patronizing to me, which is very, like, I'm very easily, like, I very easily do I feel patronized. Like,
yeah.
In most films, do I feel patronized. And in this one, I was just like, no, it just made me feel nostalgic and,
yeah.
like, you know, pleasantly surprised at how much I still enjoyed this film after not seeing it in easily 15 years.
Yeah, well, because the Scooby-Doo gang is pure, man.
Yeah.
They're, like, they're just there to solve shit
yeah.
and, like, get shit done. And even, like, though they're looking for something real, Daphne's not, like, being high-strung about it. She's just, like, the only conflict is her and Fred trying to fuck other people. That's it. That's all it is. Just
yeah,
them.
That romantic tension.
Yeah, she's trying to fuck the cat girl, and she's trying to fuck the undercover cop. Like, that's it. But they don't know, obviously, what they are. They're just like, yeah, she's on my lap.
Yeah.
And Daphne's just like, so you work around here, huh? Like,
yeah. That's
it. That's the only conflict. Everything else... There's no unnecessary bullshit because it's Scooby-Doo. Why would you fucking do that?
Yeah.
Hell
and then
no.
And then also Scooby-Doo's conflict with all of the cats on the island.
Okay, that was actually kind of weird. That's the only part, because I didn't remember him having any animosity towards other animals.
You don't remember that?
Not, I didn't remember it in this,
oh.
but prior to this.
Oh, yeah. I think that was just for character. That was just for, like,
a conflict.
Fodder.
Yeah. Well, because the thing is, Scooby-Doo was never mad in any of the previous ones. So to see him kind of be like, fucking rats. Like,
yeah.
And I do like how he called them rats, though. That was cool.
Well, that's because he has a speech impediment.
Yeah, but I think also he would have done it anyways. But, like, to see him mad was a little weird.
Uh-huh.
That was the only thing that kind of threw me out of it for a second, but then I got used to it because, oh, right, cats are the fucking villains, and it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it makes more sense in that
It's
realm.
Almost, like, kind of not, I mean, it's kind of, like, foreshadowy.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly, which, again, is it's why this is a very well-done direct-to-video movie. I would have saw this in theaters.
Oh, absolutely.
I would have seen this shit in fucking
theaters. Oh, absolutely.
Theaters.
I almost thought it was. Because it actually, I forgot to put this in here. It did have a limited theater release. I think
oh,
it did
okay.
show in a couple, like, very few scattered theaters, I
Interesting.
Think. I do believe. Don't quote me on that, but I believe so.
Pretty cool. All right, cool. But no, I honestly, again, my experience, guys, I literally hadn't seen this film in, what was it, 1988, right?
Uh-huh.
2019. 21 years. 20, somebody, like, could become age of drinking
in the
time
in
the it has
time.
Been since I seen this film.
Wow.
Yeah. So this was really nice to actually see again because I loved it so much and I just never got to see it again. Like, never. So I'm like, fuck. Because I, you know, puberty and shit. I became whatever, some edgelord fucker for like 5 years and then like a depressed adult for like the rest of that time. So, you know, Scooby-Doo.
And now we're here.
Yeah,
so.
Now we're here. And Scooby-Doo fell in the cracks, you know? But... This film was just a solid film. It's $4 online, guys, if you want to have a nice, just time.
It's fun.
Yeah, 90
it's
minutes.
It's so fun.
$4. You're okay.
It
Stay
is
at
a
home.
Fast 90 minutes.
It is. It's actually really fucking fast. But it's packed.
Yeah.
It's a dense film. You have action and things happening because you catch
and
up with these fuckers.
The aesthetics and, like, it's just, it's good.
Yeah. But no, honestly, the story of them being older and, like, catching up was perfect. Velma in the fucking bookstore, Daphne being a reporter.
Well, I love this, because they all, when they go their separate ways,
yeah.
the places that they go suits them remarkably well.
It does. It absolutely does.
They made great... Well, and also, I think that has to do with the production team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they all got people who have worked on Scooby-Doo in the past.
Yeah, and
everyone,
they got prime cartoon writers.
Yeah, they got great writers,
mm-hmm.
and everyone who's, and people in, like, the staff, people who've worked on Scooby-Doo in the past.
Yeah.
So they're familiar with the characters, and
mm-hmm.
they're familiar with their mindsets, and they know what would happen. Like, Velma opening up a bookstore, a mystery bookstore.
That's her.
Like, that's so her.
That's her. That's Velma like a motherfucker.
Yeah, exactly. Daphne going into investigative journalism, and Fred following following her.
Fred following her, of course, is...
Like, it makes absolute sense, you know?
I like Fred being arrogant as fuck, too, but then also just being wrong all the time.
Yeah,
he's always just like, hey, guys, no, this is just some bullshit. He's
yeah, him being, like, super cocky about that and being like, there's probably, like, oil under the island or some, like, weird... But, I mean, it makes sense, though, because it takes into consideration their past and how if you take into consideration how technically probably at this point for the better part of, I don't know, let's say 10 years, they've been solving mysteries and it's always someone in a mask. Yeah. So of course, after 10 years of doing that same thing, because they're acknowledging the repetitiveness of their own stories, which I think is very smart on the writer's part, because they're acknowledging the weakest aspect of the original series.
Yeah, and they're subverting it, which is fucking awesome, and being kind of meta about it, too. But I went on along on that one, so what do you think of the film?
So I fucking love this movie, obviously, because I picked it.
It's your birthday movie.
It's my birthday movie. So I can't even put it into words. But this movie is just so deeply connected to, like, my childhood. Mm-hmm. Because this was one of those movies that, like, while you only saw it once, I saw this movie as many times as I possibly could.
Really?
I could not get enough of it.
Damn.
I wanted to, because it freaked me out.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, like, the closest I could get to, like, being terrified in, like, a safe fashion.
Well, also, audience, it's kind of a dark film sometimes.
It's very dark.
Not all the time, but sometimes.
It's pretty dark.
Yeah.
Well, the animation style. And I think it's kind of going on to what a question I'm going to ask later, so I kind of might as well just go into it. The thing that scared me the most about this film is, like, the zombies were, like, melty.
Yeah.
And that freaked me out.
They were decomposing.
Yeah, like, there's, like, they were visibly rotting. Mm-hmm. And I think, and, like, just, like, how, like, their skin and, like, their all of walk. That was fine. Like, that part didn't freak me out. But I think just, like, them, I don't know, like, I think it was just, like, them being just, like, decomposing and, like, just, like, their face kind of falling apart and, like, how they animated it freaked me out. And I was just like, oh, man, this is, like, real freaky shit.
Yeah.
And I just loved it. And I loved the, like, obviously, at that age, I wasn't, like, thinking that it subverts, like,
everything they've done in the past. Yeah.
I just thought it was a cool movie, because it also, like, it also introduced, like, witchcraft elements, because, like, they're pagan-coded, like, victims who were herded into a fucking bayou and were eaten by alligators is fucked up.
And they, like, animate that sequence. And you hear
you
terror.
You hear it, and you hear them get eaten alive, which is fucked up.
Kids movie, guys.
And then you have, like, these, like, werecats, so you also get, like, these jaguar growls, and you get, like, very, like, audible, like, terrifying sounds for a children's movie. And then you get, like, the ghosts. So the thing that actually truly scared me the most in this film, and I think this is why I love found footage so much.
Nah, of course.
it didn't occur to me until I was watching this, but the scene where there's, like, the ghost scratching on the wall and everything, and, like, they're filming Daphne, and, like, Fred is looking over the footage later, and they uncover the ghost.
Yeah.
Scared me so much, and it was just, like, such, oh my gosh, I'm, like, I'm so nostalgic just thinking about it. But, like, just seeing that scene as a kid just brought me so much, like, joy and terror at once, because I just thought, oh my god, this is terrifying.
It's Toby.
So cool. And I just wanted more of it, and I just, it's so cool. And I think I do think that's what ultimately did draw me to found footage.
It might actually be the catalyst there. No, you're right. But I will say, too, her warning, the way it was written to the wall, was actually terrifying. It's actually scary writing.
It scared me, And then you see, like, with, like, his little, like, ghost sword, like, so good. And then when Velma, like, scratches off, like, the paint, and it reveals the name of the ship, like, that whole sequence terrified me.
It really is the most horror this movie gets, because it's horror buildup. It's horror buildup.
This is, like, a classic horror element. Like, you see this, like, if you had just transplanted this into an actual horror film, I would believe it. Like,
yeah.
I would be like, this is in a horror film. Like,
with different characters. Yeah.
Like, we could reshoot this, like, live action, and I would be like, oh my god.
Shot for shot.
Totally.
Shot for shot. You could totally do it. Although, I will say, back to the zombies, the one scene I remember freaking me out again was the zombies coming out of the lake and running or walking towards Shaggy and Scooby as they turn around because it's a long shot.
Mm-hmm.
And you just see them like lumbering towards. And as a kid, zombies are still scary.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, and they're real. So it's like, hold, they're in danger.
Yeah, like they are in for real danger. And mm-hmm. the whole time, Velma and Fred are just like, I'm sure it's just wires or magnets or blah, blah, blah.
And I want to blow the gardener. I want to get in that cat lady.
Yeah, right? Like, oh my God.
While the Confederate ghosts are all fucking everywhere.
Okay,
so. Break it in. Go bring us in on that one.
That was one of the things, like, that watching this film as an adult did bring up some unpleasant, like, instances. They are staying on a plantation.
Yeah.
Which is awkward. I mean, obviously, like, not to, like, discredit, like, the history. Like, obviously that's important that it's recognized. But also, like, it's a children's movie,
mm-hmm.
and there's, like, no, like, actual opportunity for discussion there. One of the main ghost villain creatures is a Confederate ghost,
mm-hmm.
and they're just like, oh, that's a da-da-da from the Civil War. So in this universe, the Civil War definitely happened.
Dude, he's got the gray rebel rags, too.
But that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's like, they acknowledge that it's from the Civil War. So they're definitely, like, in a world where the Civil War happened. They're mm-hmm. in Deep South, like, they're in Louisiana.
Yeah.
Like, and this ghost is just, like, and they don't acknowledge it's a Confederate soldier. They just mm-hmm. acknowledge it's a Civil War soldier.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh, my fucking God. There are Confederate soldiers in this movie. It's- like, there are Confederate ghost soldiers. Like, that is awkward.
It's a good thing that the mystery team is all white.
Right? Like, one black how member. Awkward would that be? Good lord.
Let's haunt that guy for a little bit, though.
Like, oh my gosh. Like, and it's, obviously that's one of those things that totally goes over your head.
It does, yeah.
But you hold, like, I mean, that's those things that, like, you internalize as a kid because you absorb everything you see.
Mm-hmm,
and it's just, like, you don't even realize it because I totally forgot, I mean, like, I kind of remembered that it took place on a plantation, but I didn't, like, really, like, acknowledge that it took place mm-hmm. on a plantation.
Yeah, I didn't really know much about plantations back then anyway, so it's
also,
like, whatever.
Technically, that character, because the characters, because they were immortal, mm-hmm. definitely owned slaves.
Yeah, no, they had to have, and they probably had to, like, yeah, go through and, like, oh, shit, we gotta get rid of the slaves now and figure out labor.
Yeah. Well, no, because they were just like, oh, yeah, this plantation's been in my family for generations. And mm-hmm. it's just like, well, yeah, it's because it's you and because you're immortal. So they definitely own slaves. Yeah. So.
And the Civil War was maybe, like, three generations before that. So generations with an S.
That's awkward.
Yeah, someone's got some slaves in there. Yeah,
yeah, so I don't know. That's bad. That's a lot of bad.
But, again, Confederate zombie ghosts and paranormal shit. And
there's a lot
in this fucking movie. And even then, the zombie island thing itself, like the beginning, it's a horror, like, mm-hmm. title screen.
Yeah,
it is. It's totally not like, and it's the Scooby-Doo blah blah blah.
Well,
it's,
I
like
love the opening,
zombie island.
Yeah, I love the title sequence because it's not a dream sequence, but it's Daphne telling a story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
And like, that's how you get the title sequence. And I think that's a great way to tie it in because it's retelling one of, like, the classic, like, Scooby-Doo, Where Are You stories.
Yeah.
And then explaining after that, we basically were just, like, tired of the monotony of this life, so we all went our separate directions.
Dude, seriously, that's a good point, because, yes, the montage at the mm-hmm. beginning is perfect for any fan who knows about Scooby-Doo and whatever it is, because it acknowledges, basically, like, look at this repetitive bullshit.
It's down to the, like, they run in one door, and 3 seconds later, they come out another door, a couple mm-hmm. doors down, and it's just, like, those kinds of little things that you see in the classic Scooby-Doo, Where Are You, like, show.
Yeah,
I think that's
the
really
old
cool.
Benny Hill fucking bit. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I guess that kind of ties into the other question. What was your experience with Scooby-Doo growing up?
I watched a lot of cartoons because I was a kid that was babysat a lot. Good old Mexican nannies. They had the TVs that were just boxy, and you had to actually hit the dial and do the antenna.
Fun.
So, yeah, good times. So you got the main channels, but then you also got, like, 5 or 6 channels that mm-hmm. were just also public broadcasting, but unless you got the antenna right, you're not going to see it. One of the ones that got the antenna right played old Scooby-Doo, which was really fucking cool. So I would watch Scooby-Doo a lot, actually. It was part of my early regiments, like early, with the Muppet Babies and Tiny Toon Adventures and Rocko's Modern Life and all that shit, because I had the hours segmented. So I knew what I was going to watch.
I know. How weird is that? Like, you remember, like, okay, at this time on this channel, like, this show came on.
New Batman Superman Adventures. Cool. Yes.
Well, I know, but, like, that shit. Like, it's just, like, you remember that shit as a kid. And it's just, like, now I'm just, like, I could not tell you what time any show ever comes on.
Anything.
Like, I could tell you that, like, new episodes of Chernobyl come on HBO on Mondays. Like, that's
I want to watch that.
It's really good.
I've heard.
It's so fucking good. Don't
maybe after this.
Don't eat while watching it.
Okay. Not going to do that. I'll just get a little stoned.
Right, don't do that either.
You can't. I'm just going to do it anyways. But I also, in between cartoons, I would watch the Discovery Channel as well, because we had ended up getting cable after a while. So, you know, it was, once I started diversifying my...
I inhaled so excitedly, I choked on my own face.
But once I started diversifying the type of stuff that I would watch, Scooby-Doo started falling by the wayside. But since it was so early, Scooby-Doo, the Jetsons, and Flintstones were pretty fun. Hanna-Barbera was fundamental in Yogi Bear, of course, being a fucking piece of shit. It all had a stake in my early childhood.
It was fundamental, but it's true. It's where you kind of built your foundation, and then you kind of built your interest off of it.
Off of it, exactly.
That's where I got into, like, Discovery Kids and the Discovery Channel, and, like...
I loved Discovery Channel so much when I was a kid.
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I would go from there and get into, like, Investigation Discovery and, like, true crime shit.
But then...
No, yeah, you're totally right. Or, like... Disney, all that stuff.
Yeah, well, I wasn't as much a Disney kid. It was fucking weird. I don't know. Yeah, I really wasn't.
I watched
the movies, not necessarily the TV shows.
Anytime I was like...
Wait, Goof Troop. Watch Goof Troop. Sorry.
No, I watched, like Kim Possible. I really liked Kim Possible as a kid.
Oh, see? Yeah, I was a Nickelodeon kid at that point.
Yeah, but I watched all of it. Like, there was initially the, as we talked about before, the Cartoon Network versus Nickelodeon, like, fan war. Mm-hmm. And you were either a Cartoon Network fan or a Nickelodeon fan, and that was it. And then Disney Channel came along, or kind of had been the up-and-comer kind of in that situation.
It's kind of what it's doing now with streaming services. Yeah, it kind of hijacks the attention.
Yeah, right? It's kind of like it's been planning this all along.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, there's a market there? Oh, my God. Let's see how that plays out.
But no, so it's just... And then kind of Disney Channel came along and introduced all these TV shows, and then you had all three. So then it was like, are you a Disney Channel kid? Are you a Cartoon Network kid? Are you a Nickelodeon kid?
Dude, fucking cynical me was like, fuck the Disney Channel kids. I didn't listen to Radio Disney or any of that shit. I was like,
I never listened to Radio Disney, because I was just like, this is far too excitable for me. But this is also like, I grew up listening to, like, I'm wearing a Metallica shirt right now.
Exactly.
Like, this is the shit I grew up listening to. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I think it just depends on, like, kind of like where you were, how you grew up. But with Disney Channel, I remember, like, I only like certain TV shows, but they had a game show channel.
Really?
Or is that Nickelodeon? Nickelodeon did. Nickelodeon had a game show channel, and this was only if you had, like, cable.
Yeah, premium-ass cable.
Yeah, premium-ass cable, and I only did, like, as a late child, as I moved up
ladder. Yeah, exactly. Same here, yeah. No, that actually happened with us, too. My dad, once we had the opportunity to just get cable, he was like, okay, we're gonna have all the channels all the time, because... That's Why how not? We do it in this
right.
family.
Right. So once we got like it, and the game show channel, and then I was obsessed with game shows. Like, but funny. They were children game shows. So like Legends of the Hidden Temple.
Legends of the Hidden Temple. Yeah.
Like that shit. We are getting so sidetracked.
Double Dare.
Double Dare. Double Dare 2000 was my shit.
I dropped off at that point, but yes, I know what you're talking about, because I remember the advertisements.
It was like AOL, and it was like dial up.
The nostalgia episode today, guys, just so you know.
This is the nostalgia episode as I go into my 24th year.
Wait, but with Scooby-Doo, though, again, so early, so when all this stuff started happening and I saw this advertisement for this movie, I had nostalgia.
Yeah.
As like a later
even
kid.
Even as a child.
Yeah, and when that came, to see an updated version of something I had known just instinctually... was fucking awesome, because Fred and Daphne, keeping them in different clothes and looking like adults was perfect for this movie.
Yeah.
That perfect.
It establishes them. And I pointed this out because I just now realized it in one of the scenes where they're eating dinner. They are drinking wine.
They're drinking wine,
they
guys.
They are at least 21 years old.
Fred's developing a buzz and be like, isn't that even fucking real, man? Like, there's probably some gas or some shit. This is stupid.
They're all getting shit-faced.
They're all getting shit-faced. I want to be a real reporter.
But no. And then, so I think that's... a very it's an important point, is that they are adults.
They're adults,
they
yeah.
are like not the teenagers that we kind of grew up watching.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really important point.
Yeah, no, so your experience with Scooby-Doo coming up. Same shit?
Very similar.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we touched on this while we were recording or not, but for Hanna-Barbera TV shows, they were mainly on like Boomerang.
Yes, Boomerang. We mentioned a little bit.
At that point when I was a kid, mm-hmm. so they weren't so much on Cartoon Network anymore, unless it was like really early in the morning.
Yeah.
Because then once you got later into the afternoon, it went into like their more popular programming, so that's when you got like Powerpuff Girls, Dexter's Laboratory,
yeah.
all that stuff.
Early morning cartoon for so but,
like,
different.
Early
so
morning.
So different.
Like, yeah, the early morning stuff is when you would get your Scooby-Doo. And like, yeah. so I really only got to watch it if I was homesick from school.
Oh, okay.
Or if you were watching Boomerang.
Yeah, exactly.
And then Boomerang was also, I had mixed feelings about it because I only liked like one or two TV shows.
Yeah, it wasn't something to leave on.
Yeah, and it was like Scooby-Doo and sometimes the Jetsons. Like, it wasn't even always the Jetsons.
The Jetsons, besides Scooby-Doo, the Jetsons had the second best song.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It had the second
the Jetsons
best song.
Was great.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, here's
Joe Jetson. Yeah. Son Elroy.
Yeah, that's fucking awesome. But yeah, and I think that was my extent to watching it. But if I was ever homesick and I got to watch, like, original, like, Scooby-Doo Where Are You episodes, it was a great fucking day.
Yeah.
Because they would play, if I got to catch it in the morning, they would play 4 episodes, like, back to back.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a whole different era than shit.
Yeah, I mean, it was on cable. Like, I'm talking about on cable. Mm-hmm. So it was,
that makes sense.
They would have, like, a block where they would just play Scooby-Doo episodes, and it would be, like, 2 or 4 episodes, probably, back to back.
See, my shows for that, because we didn't have cable at that time, but I remember the earliest ones were, they did old anime.
Mm.
Yeah, but only, like, commercially ones. So I remember Speed Racer, I remember Sailor Moon. Was
okay,
on there,
yeah.
and then Ronin Warriors. Those
okay,
were the three.
Okay, really?
Yeah, those were the three. If you, I
missed,
was up early enough, I could catch them.
I miss Sailor Moon.
I remember Sailor Moon intro all the fucking time, dude.
I miss Sailor Moon, which
it's
is unfortunate.
The one called Sailor Moon. Yeah!
Oh, man. So this is just our nostalgia/horror episode, which, by the way, like, this is categorized as a horror comedy.
It
so.
Is. It actually is in the realm of that. And
but
there
going,
are some terrifying scenes.
Yeah, going off of that, would you classify this as a horror film?
Not 100%.
Well, of course not.
And it definitely has horror elements.
It's a children's film.
Children's horror, absolutely.
It's like, would you classify, like, Watership Down as
yeah,
a horror film?
Exactly. Yeah, same kind of, well, that's a lot more gruesome than this one. A lot darker. But also, it's a lot more of a, like, film
I think they're darker,
you know?
In different ways.
Yeah, that's true.
I would say that they're both dark, but they're darker in different ways. Because this one, you have, like, mass murder.
Yeah, that's true. That's very, very true. It's not an emphasis,
our
but it is
our main werecats are, I mean, it's not, like, acknowledged, but it's definitely implied that mm-hmm. they are mass murderers.
And the way the one werecat runs towards Scooby and Shaggy mm-hmm. at the end, the fucking bayou guy, mm-hmm. I'm just like, holy crap, he's sprinting at
Jax.
Them. Jax? Yeah. Jax. But this is horror to me in the same way that, like, Hocus Pocus was when
okay.
it came out. Because Hocus Pocus had some pretty, like, horror elements
oh, so
as a kid.
It scared you?
It had that vibe.
Yeah, okay.
With, like, the...
Because there were true parts of this that freaked me out as a kid. Like, that scene with Morgan Moonscar or whatever the mm-hmm. fuck his name was. Like, that scene with him as a ghost carving shit into the kitchen wall. Like, that terrified me as a kid.
That's some Paranormal Activity shit right there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, like, Hocus Pocus, because I think I didn't watch Hocus Pocus until I was probably around maybe 7 or 8.
Okay, maybe that could be an indicator right there, because Hocus Pocus is one of those movies, as far as I can remember, I knew it.
Mm.
And although it didn't really scare me, there were some elements that I felt like, you know, like, what's the cat's name? Salem? When he dies, and he comes back, and he just, like, fucking repurposes himself, and I'm like, that's gruesome. And
no,
the zombie?
Salem, that's not the name.
Oh, Salem Sabrina Teenage Witch.
Yeah, it's Binks.
Binks, Zachary Binks.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Salem Sabrina
yeah,
the Teenage
Yeah, I was like,
Witch.
What are you talking about? It's Binks.
Yeah.
But I do love Hocus Pocus, and we will definitely cover it.
At some point,
at
guys.
At some point
Sneak
soon.
Sneak preview.
So,
that's happening.
That one's definitely
that's
being
fucking
planned.
Happening. Yeah.
So it's gonna that one's going to be fun, because I do really, really enjoy Hocus Pocus.
That one, if we get into the childhood part, oh my God, I'm going to rant. but happily.
Let's see here. So, have you seen any of the other three?
No.
You haven't?
I haven't. Okay. I haven't seen any of the other ones.
Okay, I'm going to talk about them for a little bit.
Do it. Give us a lowdown.
Witch's Ghost, I remember I only saw that one a couple of times. All the other ones I've really only seen sparingly.
Yeah.
This is the one that is most prominent in my memory.
It was in the VHS a lot, I would imagine.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, this is the one that scared me the most, and this is the one that felt the most authentic, and I was really chasing that horror high as a child. Which it says a lot about where we are now.
Exactly. Yes.
but
thank you for listening.
Witch's Ghost I really liked because it also had the Hex Girl, so that was like I was real into it. And then the Alien Invaders one, that one took place in like New Mexico in the desert, and it was just like really I didn't care for that one. It
sounds depressing.
it was like Area 51 ish.
Okay.
And Aliens was one of the few things that actually genuinely freaked me out as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't really care because it wasn't authentic enough for me. I watched Signs at an unreasonably young age, and it scared the ever living fuck out of me.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Yeah. I saw that in theaters. I remember that.
You saw Signs in theaters?
Yeah. I was a little older though. It came out like what, 2001, 2000?
I think somewhere between 2001 and 2003.
Yeah, at that point, I'm, like, a teenager.
Oh, okay.
So,
that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, at that point, I was, like, I don't know, anywhere between 6 and, like, 9.
Yeah, I remember liking it, though, because I liked The Sixth Sense a lot. So I was like, I have to see what the Shyamalan guy has going on. And
turns
I did
out,
like Signs.
Not a lot.
Well, the thing is, okay, with real brief aside, I loved Signs even when I was younger. But then The Village came out after that, and I was like, this is shit. And that's when...
Which is so funny. The Village is like the polarizing M. Night Shyamalan movie.
I went on the shit side of it. I was like, no.
So many people love that movie. That was actually one of the first like horror films someone tried to show me. And I was just like, that's it?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
no, because I was like at a friend's house. And like, this was like someone... And I was
We're
just
We're
going like,
to watch a scary movie.
Yeah. And I was just like, I don't know if I can watch scary... Like, my mom's going to be really mad if she finds out. And they're like, you're going to like it. It's not that bad. It's a pretty scary movie, though. So be prepared. And I was like, okay. And I sat there and I was like, I don't know, 10 or 11 maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched all of The Village and I was like, that's it?
You're like, that was a movie, yeah.
Definitely a movie. And they were like, oh, yeah, it's this guy. And I'm like, the guy who did Signs? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, and I was like, Signs was much scarier. Signs scared the shit out of me. Again, Aliens is like, really well done alien movies will get under my skin because aliens freak me out.
But it's also, alien movies are really hard to do well.
Yes.
Because people fuck them up so
alien
bad.
Alien movies are so easy to fuck up.
They are so, so bad. But we'll cover some alien
Definitely.
Shit coming up, guys. Don't fucking worry about that.
Yeah.
Ugh. But, okay, so, and then, so when it comes to those three movies, they were just a lesser quality overall?
Overall. Cyber Chase, I remember I either saw it in a drive-in or I saw it at church. I remember seeing it on a big projected screen. I don't remember.
They would definitely not want to play this one in church.
I don't think so.
This one would not be a good... With the pagan shit and like...
Well, no, because Cyber Chase, not...
No, that's what I mean, though. Like, Cyber Chase, I can probably see that happening.
No, this one probably
definitely
not. well, because, again, and I keep saying pagan coded, because they keep, like, they're just like, we worshipped our cat god, and we isolated ourselves from society, and then the pirates came and pillaged our lands, and I'm like,
they
oh
never
my
spell
god.
Things out, but they're always alluded to, for sure. Yeah.
And it's just like, you worshipped your cat god?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, all right, whatever.
Good. And, yeah, we were wearing the rebel fucking attire. Yeah.
Yikes. But, yeah, Cyber Chase, I actually enjoy. I remember enjoying because, and I talked about this, but the original Scooby-Doo Where Are You cast comes back.
Yeah, you were telling me about that.
Yeah, basically, it's like they're doubles, and they have to, like, find their doubles.
That's so weird.
And that's where it kind of plays on a lot of the tropes, like, specifically with Daphne, because Daphne's... alter, quote unquote, is like super like ditzy and obsessed with her own appearance.
Really?
And like very like, oh my god, nah, nah, nah.
And like fucking millennial Daphne is
just like, what the fuck are you doing? We gotta go.
Like, I'm a 90s woman, all right? We're getting results out of this.
Yeah, and so, I think that's a very interesting thing that they address. So, but also, again, you also have Velma, who has the I've fallen and I can't get up line in the way in which it's. Go. ghost. So
damsel. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, it just depends. So I think, I don't know, I like them. I kind of want to rewatch a couple of them just to see if like they are as bad as I remember. But arguably, from what I recall, I think this one's definitely the best.
Interesting. This actually, watching this made me want to watch the live action movies.
Yeah.
I didn't like them. Well, because I was a cynical, stupid, edgelord piece of shit teenager when they came out, and I loved the cast.
I was getting there. I was getting to that point because I was just like, why are they making it a live-action movie? It doesn't need to be a live-action movie. And now I'm just like, I don't know why I was so cynical, because it has a great cast.
Well, see, that's the thing. I grew up on She's All That and all those other fucking teen movies from back in the day, and I love them. They were my dream cast as a kid. For live action, but when they did it, I was stupid.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you have a great cast. The actress who plays Velma, whose name is currently escaping.
Linda Cardellini, is
Yeah. Like, I mean, like, she's been in, like, everything.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I loved her. Mm-hmm. And then,
Freddie Prinze Jr.
Yeah, Freddie Prinze Jr., Sarah Michelle Gellar, like,
Matthew Lillard.
Like, who was in Scream, obviously, and, like, you know, but Sarah Michelle Gellar was, like, a huge one for me, because at that point, what was this, 2004?
I don't even know, 2003 maybe?
2003, 2004. So at that point, by the time these movies came out, I liked Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
And she was Buffy, yes.
Right, and I was, like, obsessed. Yeah. So
And puberty me was, like, Cruel Intentions, girl.
Yeah, so she's also in Cruel Intentions. Also, I Know What You Did Last Summer.
I Know What You Did Last Summer, that's right.
Freddie Prinze Jr. was also... And I know
she did last summer, the first one.
Yeah.
Oh, no, he was in both.
Yeah, he was in both.
Because Jennifer Love Hewitt's love interest.
Yeah. Well, also, that's where they met, I believe.
They were a couple for a while, too, right?
No, they got married.
They got married, yes.
They're still together. They're happily married.
So, very successful couple. There you go.
Yeah, so they are still together and happily married.
Freddie Prinze was the dog, though. I fucking loved that guy back in the day.
So, oh man, this is great 90s nostalgia.
I know, yeah. This is a treat for all of you guys. This is her birthday one.
Yeah. Well, this is great. I'm always down to talk about 90s film. Even though I wasn't around, like, I wasn't, like, socially aware for a lot of the 90s, I still was consuming a lot of the media, which I think is cool.
When I was a kid, 80s shit. 80s horror, all that stuff. I was consuming that as well, even though I wasn't really, like, an 80s kid, because I only was born at the very end of it. So it's like... You get the residue.
You kind of get the best of both worlds because you, like, were technically born. So you were technically an 80s kid, but you, like, were really, like, a 90s kid. Like, you grew up in the 90s.
True. I was an 80s toddler. Man, I was a 90s kid.
Yeah.
But enough of a kid to know when Scream happened and horror changed.
Yeah.
That's what my consciousness was like. Things are different now.
Well, that's the thing. And, like, that we talk about that because you were, like, a freshman in high school for 9/11.
Yep.
So, like, completely different parts of our lives, because, like, I was in, like, first grade.
Damn, that is a big difference right there, yeah. Well, it's weird when you're adults, though.
Right.
Because, the difference shrinks,
Now it's totally different, because now we can both drink. Like, it's fine.
Yeah, and we're both miserable in our own little things, you know? Shared misery has no age. No, it does, past 21.
But you know what I mean, though? Like, I think it's just interesting, like, kind of, like, how those dynamics shift. But we still have very similar experiences in how we, like, it with Scooby-Doo.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Like, we still watched it. We still consumed it. And, like, we still remember it. Like, I don't definitely remember a pup named Scooby-Doo.
Yeah. I mean, that's how much you know Scooby-Doo is a part of Americana. It really, really is.
Like, oh, yeah. Even in, like, you know, pop culture references, you still have Scooby-Doo being referenced. Like, even, like, I remember, like, in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, their little team, like, they always call themselves, like, the Scooby Gang.
Dang. That's it. Okay.
Like, that's, like, a for real reference that they constantly
make. Constantly bring up. Yeah. That's right.
In the show. Like, they call themselves the Scooby Gang.
And, like, other shows would do subversions of it. Like, a lot of Adult Swim shows would, like, you know, they'd jock on Scooby-Doo a little bit, but they'd, like... do it in their own way or that's, like playfully acknowledging it, but being stupid.
Yeah, or, like, you know, like, that's... Or, like, it becomes this acknowledged thing where you have, like, a group of people, like, they're running really fast and the rug underneath them is running, but they're not. And, like, then they run. Like, those are the kinds of, like, tropes that, like, you get from something this, like, huge, I guess.
Again, with Hanna-Barbera and this being pretty much the most successful one, aside from maybe the Flintstones... Yeah. The Flintstones was huge.
I mean, the Flintstones were definitely huge in their own right, for sure.
I mean, for a primetime cartoon, they were, like, big.
But here's the thing, is I think Scooby-Doo is more successful because they stand the test of time.
Oh, no, that's what I mean. Yeah, exactly. Hanna-Barbera was, like, just Hanna-Barbera. For mm-hmm. Scooby-Doo to be the thing that comes out of it, and be, that's yeah. why it's Americana.
Yeah.
Because Hanna-Barbera is Americana. But Scooby-Doo is the dominant one to come yeah. out of it. Because nobody gives a shit about Yogi Bear. Fuck Yogi right. Bear. Like, he was cool when I was young, but, like, fuck Yogi Bear.
Right. But, like, even then, like, I wasn't, like, a huge Flintstones fan, but we mm-hmm. still got a bunch of Flintstone movies.
Yeah, a lot.
You know? Like, we still got our, like, John Goodman. Flintstone movie.
And then fucking, yeah.
That's like, guy from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, and, like, yeah.
Rick Moranis.
Yes, right. Rick Moranis. Thank you. But, yes.
We never got a Jetsons movie, did we?
What? No.
Did we get a Jetsons
I don't, one? Maybe we did. I don't know. If we did, I don't remember it.
All right, somebody get on that.
Let us know. Do a Jetsons. Someone could be yelling at their phone, yes, we did, or no, we did it.
Nah, dude, there has to be, somebody's got to cast as George Jetson. That's Gary Cole right there. I know it.
But yeah, so I bet Scooby-Doo is the one that stood the test of time, and we still get to kind of, it isn't, it's timeless. Like, mm-hmm. I could probably still sit through classic Scooby-Doo Where Are You episodes from like 67, yeah. 68.
With the Harlem Globetrotters rolled up in there?
Probably. Yeah. And like tolerate it.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it would be fun. I honestly think it would still be fun.
I think it would be fun. I don't know how I'd feel about the Harlem Globetrotters or, you know. I would watch the one with the Addams Family, probably.
No, that would be fun.
That'd be dope.
But out of five Scooby snacks, what do you rate Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island?
Purely from nostalgia purposes, I'm gonna, and like just pure enjoyment factor, I'm gonna give this a 4.5.
I'm giving it a 5. I'm going 5 snacks.
I'm saving my 5.
I know you are. See, I'm that's saving why.
My 5.
And I'm just handing out 5s, but.
But this is my 4.5 out of 5. Like, yeah. And I know I'm like ranking this above like classics. Like, I think I ranked this above like something else.
No, this is like over Carrie and shit.
Yeah, right? Like, I definitely ranked this higher than I did Carrie, but I did enjoy this more than I did enjoy Carrie, so. Mm-hmm.
I honestly think if you're going to watch a Scooby-Doo piece of media, this is the one to watch.
I would say this one, and then if you were born after 96, mm-hmm. 95, 96, then I would say it's this one, and then the live action.
The live action one, that's right. See, yeah. God, I wish I wasn't such a dumb bastard.
Live action is good. I personally thought it was so good.
There were two movies, right?
Yes. I don't remember the second one as well. I remember the second one actually freaking me out because they had a clown in it.
Oh, wait. Is that the... Which one is the one with Scrappy-Doo?
Scrappy-Doo's in both of them.
Oh, is he in both?
Well, it's a spoiler for the first one.
Okay. Sorry, I fucked up, guys. But if he's you the villain. Seen that, yeah, I remember he's the villain. Yeah. I remember that.
He's the villain in the first one. And then I'm pretty sure he makes a... I think he might be in the second one, but he's definitely in the first one. I don't remember the second one very well, but the first one was really good.
I remember his motivation was like, it made me laugh so much because I fucking hate Scrappy-Doo.
Oh, yeah,
because
he had like Napoleon. He basically had like Napoleon syndrome.
He did, yeah. I was like, whatever about the films when I saw them. I'm going to watch them now at some point, I'm sure, because I'm into Scooby-Doo because of this fucking thing. But I do remember really loving Scrappy being the villain, like a lot. Actually.
Oh, yeah. I remember enjoying that as well. I think, are you good?
I'm good.
Is there anything else other than like, please watch this movie?
Listen, guys, if we were going to keep talking about this, it'd be a 2-hour goddamn podcast.
Of us just gushing about this movie.
About Scooby-Doo and 90s shit. We want to do something special for you guys. You know, this is Alex's birthday. We talk about expanding this podcast into stuff that's not traditionally horror or comedic. We did it with March, obviously, so we're going to, you know, be a little more experimental here and there, but this was a fucking delight. And
this was a much-needed reprieve after The Exorcist and then American Mary, yeah. Which thank you, everyone, for your feedback and love. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we got a lot of people listen to The Exorcist. It's a pretty popular movie, I guess, you know? but also... we're going to get back to the scares, so don't worry.
Yeah, we are going... yeah. So, you might have noticed, we're halfway through my birth month,
mm-hmm.
and we have not gone into my favorite subgenre yet.
Yeah, we haven't yet. Well, I mean, no, we have.
No, we haven't. No, I'm talking about this month.
Oh, this month. No, we haven't.
We have not gone into my favorite subgenre this month, and if you listen regularly, you know what that is.
Yep.
And if you've listened to this episode carefully, you definitely know what this is.
Mm-hmm.
And next month we are doing...
Next week.
Next month? Did I say next month?
You did.
Next week we are doing capital T the, movie for this particular subgenre.
We are, and I can't... Ooh, it's gonna be fun.
It's gonna be fun.
Because you guys know how I love, like, marketing and production and all that, and box office. This is all those things rolled into fucking, the production is going to fucking be awesome.
You just lit up like a Christmas tree. I can't wait.
It's your favorite genre.
Yeah, it's my favorite genre, so it's going to be a fun one, I think.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite Hollywood stories. So, together,
it's going to be fun.
It's going to be
good. So, we have a lot planned, and it'll be good, and then we're closing out the month with my all-time favorite horror film.
All-time, yep.
All-time favorite film, period. And, not even horror, like just all-time, so.
And it's a good one.
It's a good one.
It's a good one.
So.
With that, guys, I think we're out. We're peacing out.
Yeah, we're good. Thank you so much for listening. That was Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island from 1998.
Fuck.
If you are so inclined, please, please, please give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. It means the world to us. I know a bunch of people who listened just recently gave us some 5-star ratings, and thank you for that.
Seriously, you guys fucking rock. Our numbers went up. I love that.
Yeah, so I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. If you want to find us on social media, that's where we update. Sometimes we ask fun questions. We do a lot of our fan interaction on social media, so please feel free to reach out to us there. You can find us on Twitter at Ghost... That's mine. You can find us on Twitter at Horror People Pod, and you can find us on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORROR BLE People's Podcast. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at at Ghost Coffee Shop. And then you can find Anthony on both Twitter and Instagram at Herulean Hustler.
And one day I will tweet again. Trying to win contests, all right? I'll do it for reals.
And then other than that, I hope everyone has a fantastic rest of your week, and I'll try to have a great birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday.
Thank you.
And peace out, you fuckers, and Scooby-Dooby-Doo. She's just looking at me now.
Bye, guys.